Today is February 6, 2013. This is Desiree Hargis on behalf of the H.J. Letcher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports. As part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Oral History Project, I'm interviewing Arnold Vitarbo over the phone about his experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Arnold, can you begin with when and where you were born?
I was born in Bronx, New York City.
And where did you grow up?
In the Bronx. I was born and raised and finished high school in the Bronx, New York.
And did you play any sports growing up?
Yeah, I played baseball with my high school team, and I ran some cross-country track.
When were you first introduced to your sport, shooting, and can you explain how that came about?
Yes, when I was in the Marine Corps. I joined the Marine Corps in 1953 out of high school, and after I finished my training, I was overseas in Japan, and I was able to I had to shoot for military purposes before that, of course. But in Japan, I was able to get involved in the competition shooting, and I was able to do pretty well at it, so.
Mm-hmm. And did you have anyone else in your family that was involved in shooting, or any friends that were involved in shooting?
Well, my older brother was in the Marine Corps as well. He shot a little bit in the Marine Corps as well before me, about 5 years prior.
And so was he somebody that you looked up to or that gave you advice about sports?
Yes. Training? As a matter of fact, my older brother was one of these type of persons. He was very, very good looking. He was anything he did well. And he kind of didn't think I was any talent. So he kind of said, I don't think you'll shoot well. So he was I wanted to show him up, and I did my best, So. Uh-huh. He's like my carrot, so to speak,
Yeah. So your training and competition, it sounds like, was supported by your career in the military. Is that correct?
At first, it wasn't. At first, I did it by myself, and I learned how to shoot by myself, and just from what I was able to come across in the Marine, in the military. I was first to train in the Marine Corps, in the Marine Corps' original sniper program. And then from there, they had a competitive rifle and pistol team, which I was able to get on and then start from there, so.
And can you tell me about what year that was and where you were stationed when you got on the competitive pistol team?
Okay, it was in 1959. I was stationed in Hawaii, in the Marine Corps base in Hawaii.
Mm. And what were some of your earliest successes in competition?
Well, the earliest one was when the Marine Corps had four divisions. They geographically divided East Coast, West Coast, Pacific, and the Far East. Being in Hawaii, I shot in the middle, on the Pacific division, and I won some titles there, and then went on to the Marine Corps matches in 1961, and I won gold medals there in the Marine Corps matches. So,
mm-hmm.
So that's what I. My first time, I started winning things,
Mm-hmm. Was there anybody in sports shooting that you admired or looked up to? Anybody that you sought to imitate?
Yes, my team captain, as a matter of fact, his name was Captain McMillan. He won a gold medal in the Rome Olympics in 1960, and he was my team captain. So when I first was assigned to the Marine Corps shooting team, he was kind of like my mentor, and I was able to learn a lot from him, so.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about leading up to the 1968 Olympic Games? What brought you to the Olympic trials?
Well, I was in the Marine Corps, and I got discharged from the Marine Corps, and I joined the Air Force. And I was once again assigned the same type of situation in the Air Force, but the Air Force was more training other people and testing guns and so on, but I was also able to shoot with the Air Force team. Now, the I tried hard to make the 64 Olympics, but I lived in Japan many years. With my wife is from Japan, and I was able to. So I tried real hard to make the 64 team in Tokyo, but I guess I tried too hard and I couldn't make it. I missed out. So missing the team of 64, I was able to kind of have more desire and learn how to control my emotions and nerves and so on. So I finally made the 68. Actually, I made the World Championship team in 1966. I shot in Germany, and I came in fifth place there in the World Championships. And then I won a gold medal in the Pan American Games in 1967 in Canada. And then that gave me more confidence in myself and more training and more experience. And so that was pretty much how I got ready for the 68 team, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about those trials and what they were like?
Well, in those days, the trials were conducted nationally, and each country was only able to select the two people out of all those who tried out for it. It was in the hundreds, so I was able to, you know, once again, the trials being a one-time deal. There's, unlike some sports, the shooting was just a one-day affair. No, my mistake. We shot 3 days, and the top two scores for the 3 days were the ones who made the team. And once again, as you know, the shooting is a sport that requires a lot of mental discipline because you have to stand still even though you're under extreme pressure and control your emotions. So once again, that's one of the things you have to learn to do when shooting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you face any problems or challenges or roadblocks during those trials? Was there anything surprising?
Well, the roadblocks were... Well, I did poorly during the early part of the year because I was trying too hard. But as I realized I was trying too hard, I was able to overcome that problem, and I was able to increase my score at my skill level, and I was able to I came in second place in the trials that year.
Okay.
To make the team in '68. I mean, it was placed in San Antonio, Texas, on a base called Camp Bullis, B-U-U-L-L-I-S. It's an Army range in there, San Antonio, Texas.
Hmm. Well, how did your friends, family, you know, anybody that knew you, how did they react to finding out that you had made the Olympic team?
Well, of course, my family was very excited and happy I made it. And once again, they wished me the best. And my brother was kind of who I first said I couldn't shoot, and he realized I was able to be congratulated by my brother, which I feel good about that, you know,
mm-hmm.
since he was my carrot, so to speak, you know.
Absolutely. And describe your event for me. I read that it was mixed free pistol. What does that mean exactly?
Okay, the free pistol is, of course, a picture of being on a football field. You're standing on the 50-yard line, and you put a target the size of a silver dollar on the goalpost, and the course of fire is 60 shots with the pistol with one hand and open sights, no scope. And that's the course. And the picture's trying to shoot that. When you're nervous, you're shaking, you've got to control yourself, and that's the course of fire. It's called free pistol. It's a course of fire it's with a .22 caliber pistol, a single shot, but it's very accurate, but also it's very demanding. It's a very demanding course, precision-wise.
Yes, that sounds very demanding in terms of precision, definitely. Well, once you made the Olympic team, what were the training methods and regimen involved in preparing for Mexico City?
And what we did, the Olympic Committee sent us up to Santa Fe, New Mexico, which was a very high elevation, similar to Mexico City. We stayed there a month, and we trained every day. There was actually the Mexico State Prison outside had a shooting range built for us. So we didn't want to go inside, of course, you know. But we shot every day, and the governor came by to greet us and a few times and stuff. So while not on the range, what we did, we went to the mountains, higher 8,000-10,000 feet, and walked a lot to get used to the elevation of Mexico City. So by the time we got down to Mexico City, we was pretty well acclimated to that elevation.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice any effects of the high altitude there in the training camp?
Well, at first, because I say have to be able to hold your breath for a long period of time, and when you first get there and not being used to it, you have to take more breaths than normal. So we had to adjust ourselves. But as the acclimated, we became used to the vibrations, so it didn't bother us at all, you know.
Mm-hmm. And was there anybody else on the shooting team with whom you were particularly close friends?
Well, yeah, one person, my teammate, another person that shooter, plus there was my captain in the Marine Corps was also there. We trained together, and all likewise. On the team there was a total of 12 people in rifle, shotgun, pistol, and small bore rifle.
And while you were there at the training camp, and as you were preparing to go down to Mexico City, do you remember hearing anything about possible protests or boycotts by members of the U.S. team?
Yes, very much so. As a matter of fact, after we finished our training, we went to Denver to process to go down to Mexico City, and we heard all about the riots and so on. And as a matter of fact, a day or two before we were supposed to leave, there was a chance we wouldn't go because they were afraid that maybe we might get injured down there. So we finally were able to go, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what were you thinking and feeling about that at the time? Were you worried at all, or were you...
I guess I was, but once again, I had my military background helped me to overcome some of that stuff. I figured we was able to trust our leaders and so on, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. What about threats of protests by members of the U.S. team? Did you remember hearing anything about that? I know you just spoke about the riots in Mexico City there, but do you remember hearing anything about protests by members of the U.S. team?
Well, not the shooting people. The shooters, the people who shot in combat, pistol and rifle and shotgun, we were ready to go. We wanted to go down there and shoot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And be well, sure, yeah.
Yeah. Well, once you got down to Mexico City, had you ever been there before the 1960s?
Well, I'd been there many times before because we used to go down there several times, sometimes twice a year, there in other parts of Mexico to shoot matches against the Mexican people. And they would in turn, you know, we had good times down there. They treated us very well, and we were able to get a lot of experience in a foreign country. So we sat there. I was in Mexico City at least twice before that, the games that had occurred and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, were there any changes between the times that you'd been there previously and then when you went there for the Olympics? In other words...
Oh, very much.
Okay.
Because previously there was just shooting ranges where that were kind of just, I guess, substandard. But for the Olympics, they made a completely new shooting complex, which was pretty, very, very nice, you know.
Mm-hmm. What other changes did you notice about the city or the people while you were there?
Well, people, they loved to be there. In fact, after they settled down the riots and so on, we were treated very well, and I've met to this day. I have a great love for the people who live down there. Mexican people are very nice people. They were humble people, and they're just nice people, that's the best I can say, you know.
Mm-hmm. What was the Olympic Village like?
Well, it was just, once again, there's about 85 countries down there, all in the same village and with different languages. And it's, you can imagine, we had six dining halls, which catered to various diets around the world. And we were assigned to with Canadians and the Japanese, as a matter of fact. But the young Japanese, they eat a lot of American food. They like steak and stuff like that and meat. But the other countries had their dietary requirements met in the other mess halls, the other dining halls. So there were six of them on the complex.
Mm-hmm. And what about the opening ceremony? What are your most vivid memories from the opening ceremony?
Okay, I was fortunate being identified with a military background. In 68 was the last time that we actually marched in formation like an organized group. Now they just walk in and just have fun, you know. So they made me the right point man. I had to keep everybody in step and call out cadence and so on. So I remember that very well, you know. And so that's what I did, you know.
That's a neat honor that you got to do that.
Yeah.
Well, did you have any memorable interactions with people from other national teams while you were there?
Well, you know, I'm fluent in Japanese language, so I made good friends with all the Japanese people, and I made some good friends with some of the people from Italy, which has my ancestry is Italian, and I was also able to meet people from the Romania and the thing like that, people like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A good friend of mine I met George Foreman. As a matter of fact, George Foreman, we had lunch with him several times, because he was in our training camp in Santa Fe. The boxing team was up there also. So we met up there, and he was a real nice guy, George Foreman, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is. I just spoke to him the other day, and he is very nice. So 1968 was the height of the Cold War and Vietnam. Yep. What effects, if any, did this political climate have on the games and the relationships between athletes from different countries?
Well, it's hard to say. Well, the Russians were there. They were the Soviet Union that time. But a good friend of mine who I knew in the Marine Corps was, for the past year had been down there under contract by the Mexican government to train their shooting team. We shot together in the Marine Corps when I was in the Marine Corps. And he was living a few blocks from the U.S. Embassy. And him being a combat veteran in the Marine Corps, he saw firsthand the riots on this big avenue called Reformer was about six lanes across with people coming in just to unmask mobs on the U.S. Embassy. And unfortunately, the commander, which I met, who gave the command to fire, shot a lot of people, that's one thing I remember that. Likewise, my wife came down for the opening ceremony. She had a seat behind the president of Mexico's box. And I was concerned about her being hit. I mean, he might be assassinated with my wife in back of him, you know. So I thought about that, you know.
Mm-hmm. That must have been very frightening.
Yeah, luckily, as I say, it turned out real well. But one thing I have to point out, how the communist countries used to control their people. My friend was watching the TV, the opening ceremonies on television, and when the United States team walked in, we got a standing ovation in the whole stadium. When the Soviets walked in, they got a polite applause. But on television, my friend said it was just the reverse. When we come to find out that the TV station was owned by Cuba, and they dubbed in the sound for us, and they changed the sound for us and so on, the Soviets.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, so that's what happened. We saw. I was at my personal. I saw that I was in the stands with the ovation we got. My friend said, TV said differently. So, well, who knows? You know, that's how they did that. So.
Wow, that's really interesting.
I do remember the Russian team. The Russians were they were very, very controlled. They wore the same clothes every day. They had to stay in a locked compound. And weren't free to roam the city like we were, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, did you have any interactions with athletes from the Soviet bloc? I know the Soviets took the gold in your event, and then the East Germans took one of the medals. What were your interactions with the athletes from East Germany?
Well, as much as I could, I was able to speak to some the East German, but the Russians, the Soviet athletes at the time, they were able to speak to people only on the range proper, but each time we had a conversation with them, there was always somebody in the background, some official listening, make sure they didn't say the wrong thing. They were very tightly controlled, they were.
Mm-hmm. And why were the Soviets and the East Germans kind of dominating in the sport at the time?
Well, first place, they just like today's Chinese people, and the athletes in China, they identify their kids in schools in all different sports, and once they identify them as a talent in a given sport, that child is picked up by the state and trained for his whole life. Whereas Americans, we were just amateurs. We were just there just best we could, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
As I started, I was 27 years old when I started shooting. So.
Right. Well, speaking of amateurism, what do you think is the difference between amateurism now versus what amateurism meant in 1968?
Well, in 1968, there was actually amateurs. There was very few people who were actually wealthy people because of their sport. I remember in the early 60s when gymnastics was just a interesting sport. Now that the kids nowadays are famous throughout the whole country. Now, I was a coach for the team in 92 in Spain, the shooting coach in 92. And I remember coming back from Spain, our plane landed in D.C., and on a shuttle bus next to me was Shannon Miller, who won a silver medal in gymnastics. And on the same bus was about three or four gold medalists in other lesser sports. And the pilot came back with his entourage, gave Shannon Miller flowers and elated congratulations, but he snubbed the other people in the other sports who won gold medals. So that's one thing I didn't really care about, you know, care for.
Yeah. So there's some kind of celebrity aspect or popularity aspect.
So the amateurs were, by and large, even all the sports were amateurs. And the best way, I mean, we were military, but being military shooting is very, very different than the stuff shot in the Olympics. So you're not really trained as an Olympic athlete by being a military. We had support, but still wasn't that much, you know.
I see. So going back to the 68 Olympics and your event competition, how did you prepare the day of your competition? Did you have any special mental preparations or physical preparations that you did the day or the day before your competition?
Yeah, well, in shooting, we try to always, I tell people that shooting is a sport in which you'll never progress past college 101. You always stay basic. And you have to keep yourself tuned into basic technique over and over and over again and be able to do this under extreme pressure, which is a lot of shaking. And the night before, we had to just concentrate on just the basics. And I did a lot of what we call dry fire and try to sleep the best we could.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to avoid the heavy breakfast and things like that, you know. Anything greasy, that's eat a light breakfast with a lot of protein, low-fat protein and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And how did you feel about your performance and the outcome of the competition?
Well, the day before, I broke the world record in my event when they had a warm-up match, and that kind of put the pressure on me myself, you know. And I was actually favored to win. But my first, out of 60 shots, my first six or seven shots were very, very bad because I realized I was so nervous. But then I said to myself, you know, I'm here, I'm going to do the best I can and do what I know I can do, and I settled down from then on. So if I had my first six or seven shots normal, I would have won the match, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel bad about that one, you know.
Yeah. Well, were you aware of the disqualification that occurred with a Swedish pentathlete during shooting for use of alcohol?
Oh, yeah, we heard about that quite often, yeah. You know, get word gets around in the village real quickly, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what did you feel about that, or what did you think about that when you heard that in 68 while you were there?
Well, I feel, once again, it's just the cheating. They're trying to find a shortcut, because shooting, shooting itself is a sport which you're using a dangerous weapon. So we constantly know such thing as shooting as anybody drink or alcohol or drugs when shooting. It's just too dangerous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So on the firing line, this sort of, wherever you shoot, there's no alcohol allowed, or and drugs, of course, drugs too.
Mm-hmm. So 1968 was one of the first years that they implemented drug testing. Did you remember hearing about the drug testing, and were you or anyone on the team tested?
I wasn't, but it was some people were. But some of the people who had been there before in 64 and also in 60 were tested.
Mm-hmm.
It was a random test. Nowadays, testing and shooting is all, if any world competition, they test the first three places and one random. So it's come a long way, you know.
Right. Now, were women shooting in the Olympics in 1968?
No, there was one woman shot, and it was just one event. This a girl, a woman named Margaret Murdoch from Kansas, who actually tied for the medal in the World Championships in 66 or 66 in Germany, and but she lost out in the final shoot off. But she was so women. There was no pistol events. Being a pistol shooter, there was no pistol events for women until 1970 or 72, I think it was. So nowadays there's separate women events in three events and so on.
So 1968 was a kind of a pivotal time in the American civil rights movement. Did you remember the protest on the medal stand done by the track athletes Smith and Carlos in 1968?
I sure do. They were the talk of the village, and the fact that we all felt that here those people were down there representing this country, and they were down there at the country's expense and so on, and they should have had more respect for what they were down there for. Now, on the other hand, George Foreman, when he won his gold medal, he went around the ring waving a small American flag. So he showed what he was made of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Carlos and Smith, I think those guys, they try to make their statement, but they should have made it someplace else. I mean, I agree that I remember the days when in the South, the people who were African Americans were not allowed to use the same restroom as white people. I remember those days, which was terrible. But I think they should have made the protest in another venue, I think.
Mm. Well, what are your memories of the media, the TV cameras, photographers, reporters, journalists?
Well, once again, in the village, they were just everywhere. And many of them didn't seem to care much about us because we were just shooters, you know. Because there was a Vietnam War and there was a stigma, so to speak, you know. So we had a few people who would interview us, but not really all that much, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a friend that talked about watching the opening ceremony on TV. Did you know any other friends or family members who were able to watch the Olympic Games back home?
Well, my wife, she's from Japan, and her family watched it during from Japan. And they had the same feeling about this Carlos and Smith and their Black Power salute. They wonder how come, because being from a foreign country, they could understand that. They should love their country. That's what they felt, you know, as Japanese. Yeah.
Well, were you able to go to other events?
Yeah, I was able to go to some boxing. I saw the long jump. I saw the 100-meter dash. And I was able to go, table tennis, which I really like that. That's really, really a fast sport, boy.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's fun to watch. So do you have any specific memories of any record-setting events that you witnessed or you know, anything really special that you happened to witness?
You mean at the Olympics or during that time?
At the Olympics.
Oh, my record wasn't a record-setting. As a matter of fact, it was close to, in those days, the record was the same score I shot. So one guy, the winners had one part of the record. So.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else that sticks out in your mind as something really memorable from those games that you experienced?
So the main thing is I can't say enough about the Mexican people. I know they anywhere we went in town, the people were very nice to us, and they were they're very, very humble people. Mexicans are very humble, and they give you the shirt off their back, actually. I made some good friends who I've known over since the time from Mexico City, and I still see them from time to time, and they come up to some of our matches and our conferences and stuff like that, you know. But the games themselves, I still remember how well a country, those days, Mexico is a lot more, not say backward, but it's a little more poor than it is now. And to make that stadium and the shooting complex I saw, and then also the other venues, I think was a remarkable thing that the Mexicans did. Because I've been there many times in the past, a few years before that time, and I remember seeing people living in buildings with no roof and no windows and just living dirt poor. And I remember I felt sorry for them like that. So to make that stadium and make the venues a success, I really have a lot of respect for the Mexican people.
Mm-hmm. Well, for you personally, what was the most meaningful part of competing in the 68 Olympic Games?
I say just being there, it was the fact that I knew I had did the best I could. I was, and I did well. I'm not downplaying how I feel. I did well, and I felt bad about not one medal, one point for a medal. But I still feel as though that being there, around the people, other athletes and so on, and making good friends, and being able to, that I was top two in my country, so to speak. And so I enjoyed meeting people in different parts of the country, but the best I can say, you know. Because in the village, you got to be, it's like being in a mini UN. People, you ride the bus from the shooting range back to our village. On the bus, people from maybe 10 different countries speaking 10 different languages at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting sound.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it must be. So, what was the closing ceremony like?
Well, that was like a, it's kind of a, how do I say it? How do I say this? Kind of a letdown. I was able to you know, just relax and not worry about the competition and just meet people and shake hands and just going to have a good time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, once again, you realize that you're not in the whole world, doesn't speak the same language, but we're all people. We have the same thing. We cry, laugh, we cry, we have fun, and so on, you know, so.
Right. Well, what did you do right after the games were over?
I went back and I took about 2 weeks off and I went to see my family up in New York and we took a little break from the time and then I sort of wanted to go back and realize, find out how I can improve myself. And luckily, the very next year, I become the U.S. national champion. I broke the world record several times in the same event. I was able to learn a lot more about myself and found out why I shot as low as I did in Mexico City, even though it was a good score, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I increased my score by about 20 points, almost 15, 18 points. You know.
Wow. Well, can you tell us about some of your big wins after 68, in the years after 68?
Yeah, I won, as I say, I won the United States Championships in several events, free pistol, rapid fire, they call standard pistol, and center fire. But also, I went back to Mexico City in 1972, 73, on the same range. There was they called it Benito Juarez. He was a famous Mexican statesman back in the 1880s, I guess. And the match was held there, and I shot against about 35 countries there, and I was able to win one of the events against the French. I filed a big protest against me about my something illegal, which I wasn't. I made the French eat their word, so to speak. I beat the French, you know. The French are the crybabies of the shooting world. used to be.
That's funny. Well, when you eventually did change or reduce your level of involvement in sport shooting, how or why did you do that? Was there a conscious effort to retire, or did your participation?
Well, I retired from the military and I went back to the college and got my degree. I'm a Japanese linguist. I went back to Japan and worked in Japan a long time, and then came back and decided to try again. So I came back in 1979 to Oregon. I wanted to retire, but I got back and shooting again. I was able to increase my level again to become. I won some national competitions again, and also, and then I went to Colorado Springs and became the national coach in '92 and stayed there for 2.5 years and then retired. So I coached the team in '92 and I still keep up with the shooting sports. I train juniors in my state. As much as I can, I find juniors who want to shoot and I'll help them become better and let them realize they can become Olympians even though they're not a world-class athlete, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, the sport, you know.
Right.
It's very rewarding to teach juniors and then be help with them, you know.
So
Boy Scouts. And,
yeah, so you're still participating or involved in sport shooting then?
Yes, I do. I go to each year to the national matches in Ohio, and I act as a referee or a match director and things such as that. And I do my best to to help a shooting club. I go around the country at this time doing clinics, and I've been in about 9 or 10 different states holding clinics, including Puerto Rico and Mexico again, and Japan. So I still keep up with it. You know, I'm getting old now, but my brain's still sharp yet.
Yeah. Well, could you list or describe some of the positive effects that being involved in the Olympic movement and in the sport of shooting have had on your life?
Well, it's given me the opportunity to travel to 14 different countries in every state in the United States and meet people who I never would have met before and realize that I can make a difference in people's lives if they want my help. So the main thing is I've been able to travel to. And my wife is also, she's involved in the sport as well. She's been an official over 20 World Cups, which we have the Olympic qualifiers. So she's, her and I kind of, we're a team that we go together at different competitions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
She does scoring and stat work, and I do the coaching and things such as that, you know.
Right. Well, what do you think is the legacy of the 1968 team, the U.S. team in particular?
I think, as I say, it was the apex, not apex, but the civil rights movement began in the early 60s. And I remember going through the Alabama and after Selma, the big riot in Selma at that time. And then by that 68 came along, I realized that the people from African descent had come a long way, but it was a long way to go yet. I say that the fact that there was this controversial Black Power salute by Carlson Smith. I think with the culmination of that, but also began to show people that I think eventually people will realize that that the world has got to come together, because the Vietnam War was coming to an end. It was not close to that. It was, I think, all that thing come together. There was a lot, and was terribly in 1972. The tragedy in Munich that killed those athletes from Israel. You remember that, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. But I think 68 was the start of the culmination, I would say, of the civil rights movement in which people have got to come together a little more, I think. And luckily, nowadays, I think the people of African descent have come a long way, and I think they're, hopefully, nobody's perfect, but I think they're a lot better than they were when I was younger, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we wrap up the interview, I wanted to ask one last question. What one piece of advice would you give to today's Olympic hopeful?
The same thing I give my junior shoes. I tell them that I tell people that unlike many sports where you have to be a trained athlete or have talent, shooting being a mental sport helps you. You have to understand you can have to control your mind. So my kids, I teach them to control their minds, and as a matter of fact, the ones who do well also do well in school, because they have to be have a goal, have to concentrate, and things such as that. So I think the best thing I say about my kids is, my trained people, is the fact that it's a sport where you can continue to grow mentally and physically, and you can tell people, I tell the kids that you can be an athlete. I developed 5 kids or so over the years who made the team in the past decade. So the fact that they can do it. It's good to see kids who come along and realize that they can do something well. It's very, very, very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it must be. Well, Arnold, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about before we shut off the recorder?
No, I just appreciate you doing this work for us and the team. And those 68 was a very eventful year, because it was a combination of the hippie days, and so to speak. Remember those days. Hippies, right? Remember those guys?
Yeah.
They were there at the height, and Vietnam was at the height. So it was a really rough year for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the Olympics was a time for the world to come together and become a little more peaceful, even though we're in the middle of a war and a lot of turmoil because of racial tension and stuff like that. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being generous with your time and with your memories.
Yeah, thank you.